You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD OD. I'm John Montgomery. It's a Monday in Chicago, Tuesday morning in Sydney. Mike, how's it going, my friend?
It's going very well, thank you.
Good. Same here. I had a lovely trip down south to see my mother this weekend for Mother's Day, of course. They're going to be moving away from being so close to me, so I figure now's the time to spend as much time as possible with them before they head out west.
Yep. Family is the most important thing.
It is. I spent an unbelievable 24 hours offline. Well, okay, I did check in briefly.
Yeah,
yesterday.
I think you did, because you pinged me about something. I was going to call you on that one, my friend. Yeah. Well,
but for me, that's kind of like, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't like you were Twittering or anything. It was just like, you know, you were just checking.
I couldn't because the iPhone ran out of juice on the way back up today, so otherwise I would have Twittered from the car. So interesting weekend.
While driving,
which is always a great thing. That and taking photos of how fast I was going and emailing them to people. Interesting weekend, though, in the box office, don't you think? I was... Talk about a...
Speed Racer got lapped.
I think, multiple times, I think, would be the question. Wow, that was amazing. Now, let me preface this, that I haven't seen Speed Racer yet myself.
Have you seen the first 7 minutes that's online?
Yes, I've seen that, yes.
Okay, but you know what it looks like, right?
Yes, so I know what it's looked like. But, I mean, I guess I wasn't... Okay, so a week ago, we had a big opening by Iron Man, right? I would consider that an unexpected opening, considering going into the weekend what they were expecting to get. So really a huge success.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And then following on that, this weekend, I'd probably consider it a disappointing flop.
So are you on fire?
In the box office. What's that?
Are you on fire?
What do you mean? Yes, I am on fire.
Okay. Sorry, just checking that.
No, yeah. I'm still working on the soundproofing.
Obviously.
I'm working from the office today, which is, so I can see outside.
They're just going for that whole ER feel, aren't you?
They're moving around stuff in the studio.
The L go by. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, it's okay. Sorry, I have my ears plugged up.
I can't believe that show wasn't shot in Chicago. I was mortified when I went to Chicago. I wanted to go on the set of ER. They're like, that's in L.A. And I said, what? No. I just left L.A.
I'm sorry. I have these Edomatic headphones. You know those in-ear headphones we talked about a couple weeks ago? I could actually I didn't sound that loud outside because I'm not actually monitoring my mic because of this weird delay. But anyway, so getting back to that. Yeah, I was actually just surprised at Speed Racer. I guess maybe semi-surprised that Speed Racer didn't do as well as expected, so...
I had a fascinating technical discussion with Kim LaBrie and others at Digital Domain about Speed Racer, and in fact, the shooting on the F-23, the log and the various gamma curves that they used on the camera, then how they transferred and then into post, and then in fact, on the techniques that they were deploying in terms of HDR and HDR lighting on the cars. We actually started the point of the interview, John, was to discuss realistic cars, like getting CG realistic cars.
And this is, for that matter, this is for FX. This is coming out as an FX podcast. FX Guide. Yep.
I should have said that. And I wasn't just name dropping. Yeah, I was just having a latte with Kim LaBrie. No, yes, it was research. And they've done some amazing work on digital cars before they even did Speed Racer, of course, in their commercials division. So we were discussing, how to basically do realistic cars. But we got into a very heavy and brilliantly technical discussion on Speed Racer. I guess this is my classic film for saying I'm fascinated by the filmmaking and perhaps less enamored with the story.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think that is the hardest thing about what we do for a living. If you were one of the artists that worked on Speed Racer, you could be pulling off feats beyond the scope of mere mortals and then have people say, oh, that film sucked. Well, actually, visual effects didn't suck. You know, the visual effects were incredibly impressive, especially in terms of how they were dealing with, the fact that it was trying to produce a new and different look.
Right.
And you have to applaud anyone that tries to give something different, right? It's just,
No, exactly. It's an interesting balance between those two things because, you know, you can be really enamored, again, by the technology, the work on the special effects. In fact, you know, Sean Devereaux actually worked on, over at DD, worked on Speed Racer. As he was struggling and working on the Nuke DVD, he was wrapping up over at DD working on Speed Racer at the time. So it's like we know lots of people who are working on the films, right? And really respect the work that's being done on it from a craft standpoint and a technological standpoint and so forth. And I have to say that, again, I haven't seen it, but I don't enjoy going to a film and knowing all that work and all that technology that went into it. I can appreciate it, but it's just so disappointing to me to not have, you know, if the story isn't good in Speed Racer or whatever, if the pacing isn't good, it's just a shame to me that, I don't know. It's not that the effort's wasted, and I can't find the right words. I'm not talking
about it's true. I mean, the bottom line is that when you push the envelope and definitely extend the basis of our techniques, you feel you should be rewarded by having an audience appreciate your work and not finding other issues about the film that get in the way of them appreciating your work.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you know, you're going to literally say to your mate, I worked on Speed Racer, and they're going to like either go, oh my God, that is the coolest film ever, which is probably what they're going to say if you worked on Iron Man. Or I heard that wasn't so good if you worked on Speed Racer. And that's got to be pretty crushing, right? Because not only are they saying that, but it's probably limiting the number of people that will actually see the film.
Yeah, especially considering the amount of time and effort that you spend on something like that as an artist. You know, you get pulled into it, especially as the film or project is ending up and you spend all this time, you work your ass off. You know, I mean, there's just, I think, a general work ethic among visual effects artists and designers. You know, you're not going to let stuff drop. You're going to send out the best quality product, and then to have it kind of go, you know, when it's actually released to the public is kind of disappointing. It's got to be. But at least you can stand on, if you are doing good work on it, you can actually stand on the work that you're doing and the kind of new technical ground that you're breaking, as well as creative ground, I think. And I think it's an interesting look.
I mean, I guess the other thing is we've got a culture of lists, though, right? And one of the cultures of lists is to rate a film's, you know, how good a film is based on its box office.
Yep.
And, you know, there have been some films that have had really appallingly bad box office in one respect, that actually had really nice, you know, visuals in them. And it must be even more difficult if you don't find an audience, and yet those that do see it really like it. I mean, I'm reminded of talking to Sheena, who worked on the prize winner of Idaho, I'm going to say, but that's wrong. But it was a film about a woman who entered competitions, and she was coming from a poor economic position. And it was, I rented it. It was a good film. They did some really nice things with the visuals, and I thought it was charming. And in that case, the film just didn't find its audience. And I'll give you another example, the U2 stereoscopic film, probably because it was marketed by National Geographic, just didn't find an audience, right? And yet that's got some amazingly cool concert footage in it. And it's just something that we need to deal with as artists. There's this, like, you can't necessarily – look, whether the Speed Racer is good or not, it would be really easy to sit here and make wisecracks about Speed Racer, right? Because it obviously lends itself to making wisecracks because it's cartoonish in its reference to anime. But it's still, you've got to take, this is something we've discussed before, this idea of taking criticism, right? It's also got to take the hits with the, and let's not deny the fact that the box office numbers can actually suddenly seem pretty inconsequential if you were, say, I don't know, working on Golden Compass and being slammed by box office numbers only to turn around 100%. And win the Oscar.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, the whole culture, and I know you've really hit on this, John, because a couple of times I've wanted to do some lists on FX Guide or FX PhD because they always rate well in terms of people reading them. And you're like, I don't want to do lists. We're better than that. But it's true, you know, like you're Golden Compass, for example, magnificent character work, just superb interaction between the digital characters, didn't find an audience. And I guess just being fairly circular about this, I actually think probably for similar reasons that Speed Racer is in trouble, which is it wasn't really clear. I didn't take my kids to see Golden Compass because I heard it was too scary for them.
Right.
But I didn't want to go see it because I thought it was a kids' film.
Yes.
Later on DVD, I rented it for the kids because, of course, then I was in a safe position knowing I could hit the pause button and also just avoid the problem of, them it being too loud and them being in trouble. Because obviously if you're in a cinema, it's loud and it's scary, and as a parent, you don't want that.
Yeah.
But I think Speed Racer, I've got a feeling, has a similar problem in that it's you know, takes itself too seriously for a kid's film, and it looks too much like a kid's film.
Right. Yeah. I got to say, I'm also probably a little out of touch in how big it is now, growing up, it was a big deal.
Speed Racer?
Yeah. Or knowing it, you know.
I liked Speed Racer as a kid. Yeah. I thought the Mark VI and, you know, the whole thing was really cool. But I think the thing is that, you know, in the Matrix films, they went for a graphic novel realized, and here they've gone for an anime realized. And the question you've got to ask yourself, and it's a bit like some of the stuff that happened with Beowulf, right, mm-hmm. is if you make an attempt at something different and you don't necessarily 100% hit, should you have not made the attempt in the first place? And I don't know. I didn't need – you know, the other thing is, I come to think of it, are there any racing films you like? I'm just trying to think
Days
of one.
Days of Thunder? No, I'm just kidding.
That you like that? Okay, well, and that's the end of PhD as we know it, and the partnership will be dissolved. What the heck are you talking about? Okay, it had our Nick in it, but what? Days of Thunder?
Oh, come on.
Are you nuts? Are you on crack?
Yeah, I'm totally... Okay, you know what? I have to admit, Talladega Nights. There's a part of me that I enjoyed Talladega Nights, but that's only because of Will Ferrell, because I will just basically watch anything that he's in.
It's the... We have the Ménage à Trois. You have George Butch.
It's okay. So,
that line alone was worth it.
So maybe Talladega Nights, but yeah, I joke, of course, regarding Days of Thunder. But
God, even Cars by Pixar, I would suggest is one of their weaker films.
It is.
Some crap. It was just one of their weaker films.
It was, you know.
I'd have preferred to see Wall-E, or... Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just saying the worst at Pixar is like the best of many other.
Oh, God,
right.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, just phrasing.
Trying to say that where is the, you know, oh my God, where's the
Tron?
The Godfather?
No, that wasn't really a racing movie.
And except that went really well at the box office.
Oh, I love that light cycle. You know how my Tron fetish.
God's sake. But it didn't do particularly well at the box office.
No,
okay,
that was
name
a good
me a
example.
Racing film that went well. You know? I mean, that was Le Mans with. I can't think of anything. I'm hard pushed to think of a
around
you
the
know,
world in 80 days. Does that count? Come on, that's a classic.
Here I'm trying to have a meaningful discussion for our PhD listeners, right? About the and what do you just you know? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, whatever. Come on. Don't.
No,
you know,
that's
it's
good.
A
that was a good film.
Film.
No, honestly,
give me a break.
Ran the Rail in 80 Days. That was probably my favorite film.
Racing film.
Well, can you think of one?
That would be it, probably.
And not exactly a classic racing film at that.
No, but you know.
Are you talking about, by the way, the 2004 version with Jackie Chan, or are you talking about the, you know,
no,
old
the
version?
The classic, man.
From 56 with David Niven?
Yeah.
Yeah, I give you anything with David Niven is pretty good, right? No, seriously. Seriously, David Niven is great. You go and watch. You go and watch Death on the Nile and tell me that isn't a good film.
Yeah,
it's like a billion years old. It's a really good film. What?
No, I'm with you. No, I'm with you on that, actually.
Or is it an English-Australian thing?
No.
Did you Americans get his accent?
I 100% agree with you on that. So I'm actually just now looking through his IMDb repertoire to see if there's anyone that I'm just like, he was in that.
David Niven was great. And yeah. John Gielgud was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway. But
I still don't think it's a good racing movie, but that's just by the by. Anyway, my point is that my whole point of this discussion was discussion about the role of giving up your life for months and then going to the cinema and having everyone go, yeah, not so much. And it's astonishing how fast a movie leaves the cinema as well. Like you tell your mum, hey, mum, I worked on this film. She's like, I was going to go and see that with my friends, but it's not playing anymore. And you're like, well, yeah, mum, that was last month.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I keep them around very much at the moving picture show anymore, do they, darling?
Yeah, I'll admit from my personal standpoint, I'm not where I can't empathize as much with that because, I mean, there are TV commercials and spots that I've worked on that, oh my God, when the time that we ship it, I don't ever want to see it again. Never, ever want to see it again, right?
I did this spot
and that's
St.
like
George,
that's like what, right, not the, 4 weeks would be a long time?
Oh yeah, I did a spot for St. George with a baby that helps another baby out. Yeah. And the thing is, I don't know what it was, but it obviously worked its socks off because they just kept that thing on air for
Oh, it's on now. It was down there. You actually pointed it out to me on the air when I was down there with you last, just like
just
at the end of
replaced
last year.
It was like, I mean, I was really glad, but it was just so funny.
Right. But I can't imagine like spending years of my life on a single project effectively. And then
imagine there's a shot you really hate and it's on DVD and then people are like picking it to... Anyway, getting back to movies, we did that stuff on Iron Man, which I thought you might be interested in because of the heads-up display stuff.
I thought that was really fascinating. I think it really was. I've seen clips of it again. I haven't seen that, but I've actually seen stuff of the heads-up display, which I thought was pretty cool. I really enjoyed the discussion in the FX podcast about that, talking about treating it as a character and so forth, which I thought was really insightful.
So I got a call from ILM this morning about doing another story on Iron Man about the suit because... We didn't go into great depths on the, rigid body dynamics of the suit and stuff.
No, I think that'd be totally cool.
Yeah, I think so.
That'd be totally cool.
Because ILM's lead, not the lead visual effect artist on the film, because that was John Nelson, who did great stuff on iRobot. By the way, there is a film. Okay, love the director.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of liked the film. If it just wasn't called iRobot, I love the original iRobot short stories. I want someone to make... Those
they just didn't. Yeah, that wasn't the original iRobot.
Wasn't no, and the no, original iRobot the thing, is right? so great yeah. with the robo-psychologist and killing me. Anyway, so the guy who's the genius behind ILM's effort, because ILM's effort in that film is magnificent, is Ben Snow. So if we can get to talk to Ben at ILM, I think it'd be really worthwhile because I think people would suffer having a second podcast on Iron Man if we just. You know, drill down because I guess you guys know this already. But what we try and do is we try and pick some part of a film and drill down on it. We learned this back in the days of 300. We did a whole thing on just one scene, and it was incredibly popular because what you try and do with a visual effects movie normally is just cover everything, and then you get this kind of shallow look at everything. And unless you're, I don't know, Cinefex that can afford to devote a huge amount of really high quality journalism to a film. We think it's better just to pick a scene, a part of a film, and then just
an
give you an in-depth...
Because, you know, in 300, what was interesting about that is, like, there was so much press about it. So much about it before it came out just saturated, and the key was to try and do something that someone else doesn't do, you know, or that's might not... or that's not as common as what someone might do, and then actually learn the lesson on that one. I think it's a good way to approach it. Like, I thought it was, again, I liked that discussion a lot. And there are lots of, you know, there are other aspects of Iron Man that are just as valid, especially considering it's gotten such a great response kind of out of nowhere. I kind of like actually seeing that from my perspective. I like being surprised by a film or surprised by the visual effects in the film, you know. Not low expectations going into it, and then what you actually see on screen, you're like, wow, you know what, that was really good. I did not know.
Yeah, well, we're going to drill down on digital cars in Speed Racer because I think that's valid whether or not you like the film or not. Hey, what else is happening over in PhD? Because we've been...
PhD land. PhD per se. Well, you know what? I've got to say I'm enjoying the discussions in the forums a lot, actually. About our last podcast, for instance, that was a good discussion. I thought that's one of the things I really appreciate hearing back from people as we try stuff out and do different things in the site. What else? Here in Chicago.
Every once in a while, somebody somehow or other gets spam into PhD. How is that possible? I'm just about to delete one. Thousands of hits
don't
from
actually
Google.
Don't do any spam. Actually, don't delete those. Please actually leave them there. That's part of the being able to see them. Yeah. So it's actually useful to have them in there versus being deleted.
Why do you want to see? Why would you want to see?
To try and to keep it from happening again. I mean, you know, it's like I don't want
to. You mean you're going to do something about it or we're just going to leave it in
our forums? I am doing something about it. I am continually doing something about it. Yeah, I just leave it in the forums.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I don't, I get my view is people aren't going to be incredibly offended by happening upon a spam every once in a while. And if I leave it in there, then we can kind of track the IPs and track potentially how they're able to do it. Because what's happening is it occasionally gets in a place where it's not even a forum that you can post in, you know? It's you can't.
That's got to be some kind of.
It's like
PHP
a bot. Yes,
door.
Exactly. That's yeah. And so I'm actually been working with the V Bolton guys and posting and trying to figure out what the actual point of how that's happening, because they're not even users on the site. So there's something that's going on. There's some little lapse or a hole in it that does it. One of the things we've done is some wanker hole. Yeah, exactly. Because one of the things too is, you know, we've done so many custom modifications to PhD that you know, we've just done a ton of stuff to integrate the classes in it, to integrate the subscriptions and the way our site works, that it's come to the point where it doesn't bear a great relation to the original software anymore. So we occasionally need to get their help from the original coders to help us figure those things out. So by having those in there, they can look at that and go, "Oh, bad things." But anyway,
Did you check out, I think I recommended it last week, that lighting class that we did with Ben Allen on...
I did not, no. I did not have the
opportunity
to do so.
You should do it. It's a good class.
I would love to.
We got a lot of good feedback on that.
Yeah, I would love to check it out. Love to be able to get the time to do that. So it sounds great from the feedback that I saw in the forums regarding that. It's been cool. And I'm loving also it's been really good. Really well received, I think.
I've been talking to Matt Leonard as well about some of the stuff they've got coming up in the Toxic Mayor class for the second half of the term. Do you remember that Wendy house out the back of the shoot that we did where we had the 35mm camera as a prop?
Yeah.
So those guys are gearing up for that, which should be really good. I'm really looking forward to that, actually.
Yeah, some really interesting stuff. It's kind of playing off kind of the strengths of those two products working together and... you know, kind of why you might want to use those two applications together as opposed to something else. I think it's interesting. And I know that Sebastian's having fun with it as well, too, as opposed to doing just a 100-level introductory course. He's actually getting to explore and look at projects and stuff. So he's having fun with that as well. And even in addition to the Maya integration stuff, there's going to be a lot more than just Maya in that, because there's a lot more stuff that Sebastian's wanting to cover as well. So I also think the Cinema 4D stuff has been cool. And that's been fantastic as well. So big kudos to that, because I think it's just Tim's just doing an amazing job in it. So actually, I think we've had a really fun term, I have to say, this term. You know, I've sampled classes and everything from, you know, top to bottom, and I just think it's really turning out to be a fantastic term on the site.
So hey, yeah, we're about a week off, or rather next week is term break, which is our 1 week gap for people to catch up.
Coming up, it's a good time actually for those of you also who've joined later in the term to give a chance to catch up and take a breath and see what's going on. But do you have any big plans next week yourself? Do you going to go off on holiday?
I'm not going on holidays. I'm taking an opportunity to go over to Weta.
I can't talk
about why I'm going to Weta or what I'm doing at Weta, but I'm going to spend most of the week at Weta in New Zealand.
Ooh, fantastic.
I will, however, be on the Thursday. No, yeah, the Thursday of the 22nd in Auckland, not in Wellington, and we're going to do a red users function in New Zealand. So
oh,
if you're
cool.
In New Zealand, and today is Tuesday in Sydney, so I think we'll get this out in time. But Wednesday, like as in 24 hours from now kind of thing, we're going to do a similar event in Sydney. So this week is Sydney, next week is New Zealand, and we've got a great spot. You know, the I can't actually say where it is on air, but you know, there's a spot that I'm very fond of down near the water at Kirribilli, John.
Yeah, I do.
Yep. Okay, I'm just going to give it out.
I'm fond of it too.
Yeah, well, we've set up there, and we're going to be filming the harbour at Magic Hour sundown, and then we'll have a real time scratch 2K system, and we'll be discussing workflow and doing that stuff, and that's all being sponsored by Future, which is very kind of them, and Assimilate. So, if anyone's in Sydney, it's a really kind of blue ribbon event, and even the guys at Redhead Office have taped a message that we're going to be playing and going through all the stuff at NAB for anyone that wasn't at NAB, so that should be good. And then we're, as I said, repeating it again on that Thursday in Auckland on the 22nd. So 14th in Sydney, 22nd in New Zealand, if anyone's interested. And that's free to anyone that emails me personally and gets an invite.
Cool. So that's MikeS@fxphd.com. If you want to get in on that. So, and we'll have this up. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday in Sydney, email them early in the morning, because it'll be up for you when you get up in the morning in Sydney.
Right.
Oh, hey, you know. Go ahead, sorry.
Go on.
Guess what came today?
What?
It's big. It's in a big brown box. It's about 290 pounds.
Your new office fridge?
My new office fridge, yes, it is. The new Flint system actually arrived this evening, actually. They now ship it in a giant box. You know, we're going to have the mother of all unboxing videos. actually, we'll show highlights in it from the update, but we'll probably actually save it for some later use. We'll just do an instructional thing on how to install a smoke system, give everyone some gas behind that. But it's pretty cool. It's a big thing kind of for me to have done such a thing. And it's quite interesting. Mike and I have talked about it some offline and privately, but a lot of people kind of sent me email. It's like, why the hell are you buying a smoke? You know, why aren't you just sticking with finishing from Avid or finishing from Final Cut? And I don't know. From my standpoint, it ended up really being a no-brainer once you work out the numbers. I mean, I guess as a starting point when talking, you figure out how much a system costs. You know, you figure out an average of a 3-year business lease or business life cycle, figure out how much money you need to make a month to pay it off and see if you can do it. And figure out how much work you need to get it to pay off. But I think one of the things that ended up doing it for me, and just not talking about the financial side of things, but talking about the finishing and technical and software desktop-based side of things, just in the end for me, it comes down to I just know how incredibly reliable getting footage in and out, especially for the type of work that we're doing, is on the smoke system. We're going to be working on with commercial clients who will be supervising stuff, who will be coming in, expect stuff to be handled quickly, expect that if I lay it off at 5, it'll be ready to ship out the door if you have to, but to get up on the satellite by 5:30. Just over time in my experience of working in the industry, the kind of reliability that I get from Smoke and Flame is just exceeds what I get from Final Cut and Avid, honestly. And there must be a friggin' fire in town. Can you actually hear that on your end?
Yeah. Jeez. The thing is, at your end, right, you personally, it's worth a premium to us, full stop, to have you not spend longer on a job. I mean, like, let's say somebody came up with I could save a little bit of money, but John has to work for 3 times longer. Well, the opportunity cost of you working 3 times longer is really a lot. And then secondly, your clients are the same, right? Like, they will pay a premium for convenience.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't tell. I mean, we love, those of you listening know, we love Final Cut. You know, it's like we put out hours and hours and hours of programming each week on it.
Backbone of what we do.
It's the backbone of what we do. But it's just on the kind of pressure and the kind of rates and the kind of deadlines, I've found over the years that it's just a little bit more, a lot more stable to kind of do the stuff that I'm doing outside of getting the stuff out of Flint and Smoke and Flame. And again,
I'm sure that it would be convenient to get a train from Chicago to New York or something, but a lot of people fly.
Right, exactly. So I mean, again, it's an interesting discussion. Just certainly one I thought about a lot, because if you're going to kind of spend the money, if you're going to spend that large amount of money on a system such as this, you better well not have buyer's remorse when they drop off a 300-pound package on your doorstep. And, you know, you've got to start paying for it. So, again, I think it just makes a lot of sense. And I got several emails from people and actually posting the forums with people asking about, you know, why didn't you just go with this or why didn't you go with that? Isn't that kind of passé to get one of these big systems from Autodesk? The other part of it is the price has come down considerably on the systems over the years from Autodesk.
It used to be like $1.1 million, $1.2 million for a flame.
Yeah. So it's come dramatically, you know, and it's not something we talk about in the podcast. But again, the stuff that they're offering and deals for new customers and so forth. And believe it or not, I am a new customer, but just, you know, people in Europe and...
Well, as an individual.
Individual purchaser. But, you know, it's something publicly, you know, if you call up Autodesk, you can find out and so forth. But again, it's not, you're not spending $500,000 on or a million on a system anymore.
Well, but the other thing is, you're working at the high end, right? This is not, I mean, we don't do stuff, we happily discuss stuff at the lower end and happily do DV Rebel stuff, right? But
yeah.
But let's face it, we also do, you know, high-end national
McDonald's, stuff. Budweiser, you know, just top level national spots that are being done with grade A directors. So,
yeah, I mean, that bank job I was talking about with the babies was just an A grade director with a national campaign for one of our, you know, top leading financial institutions.
Yeah, and there's also a good little thing with the clients that we're working with. They work with the equipment elsewhere, and they're going to expect the same level of performance and same quality and same interaction that you get elsewhere in town. So that's another aspect of it. And, you know, at this point, was in a very good position to be able to get one of the new 8600 workstations. And before I turned off the old Flint system, I ran a suite of benchmarks on the 6217, the IBM 6217 workstation. And believe me, one of the first things I'm going to do is fire up this new system and run the same suite of benchmarks in it and see what kind of performance increase we get on it. So I think that'll be kind of interesting as well. Actually, I'm going to put a call out in the forums to people with other systems, and I can load up these batch setups for them, and we can get some benchmarks from other people as well.
I actually think sometimes people sort of go, why don't you use Final Cut because it really rocks? And part of that is almost like the hope that secretly you'll say yes, that you know, $3,000 system runs rings around a, you know, six figure system. But the bottom line is the guys that make the six figure systems use the latest technology and push pretty hard, right? And I mean, I'm just fortunately it's the case. Like, you know, you can't get a HDV camera to outperform a, you know, Genesis. You can't get you may argue that the incremental cost is astonishingly different in the sense that when you go up a notch, it doesn't go up by a factor of, you know, 10%. It goes up by two or three times. But that's just the nature of professional gear, right? Like my professional camera cost 10 times what I paid for my daughter's camera. And they're not that far apart in megapixels, but one of them's a full sensor digital SLR and the other one's a really nice Canon point and shoot. And as you go up and get those extra bits that make it professional, it the price skyrockets, partly because it can, partly because you can make money with it, and partly because they just sell less of them, right? But it's the same with monitors. It's the same with gear. And it, you know, maybe it shouldn't be thus, but you know, I can tell you the incremental cost of a Lexus over a Toyota, you know, is quite a bit.
Yes, yeah, it's true. And the other aspect is I'm not using any of the other pieces of software. You know, in the repertoire, Nuke, After Effects, Final Cut, you know, all these are being used. In fact, in the update video, I showed the Final Cut XML export to the new version of Smoke, you know, that we'll be using. So it's not like, you know, they're islands anymore like they used to be as well. You know, any job that I do is generally going to touch multiple things, systems and multiple applications as well. So that's interesting thing about it. And the other thing, you know, one thing about Final Cut that's a little deceiving when you're working. So you know how you're editing along and you're watching all in real time and then you have to go and hit render, you know? It's like when you're done working on that, you've got still time to get your timeline in sequence in the form that you need to do to get it out to tape, right? That's something that there's a little bit of that actually in Smoke nowadays as well, I guess, but not the same level. So, and that's the kind of turnaround that we can't necessarily do in my market that we're targeting as well, this high-end commercial market. So anyway, it's going to be fun. So looking forward to tomorrow. And I'll spend the time a little bit tonight getting that prepped and together and hit the ground running tomorrow to get this thing up and running. And Mr. Huser is actually going to be visiting the facility tomorrow as well. He is going to be here, and maybe I'll put him to work helping out with that as well. I'm sure Jen would love that. So,
hey, changing subjects, I also put up a quick takes following on from last week's DOD. I did what I said I was going to do, or took your advice, I should say, and posted a quick take on a few thoughts on web stuff. And I've had a good response to that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It has been a good response. So it's interesting stuff to talk about, stuff that pulled from various sources on the web, kind of a little mix of our personal experience as well in it. And again, phrased, you know, again, positioned in kind of stuff that, like we said last week, it's of interest to us. So I think it maybe might be of interest to our listeners.
The one that the stuff that I pulled back on, I took out, which was pure speculation and kind of irresponsible, is I actually ran the numbers on a few of these, you know, like I would do if I was doing a business plan. So not based on fact, just based on to try and work out, you know, what the burn rate was on a couple of these companies and, you know, how much money they were losing per month.
Right.
And I don't think they're going out of business overnight, but obviously some of them have business plans that require the company to grow tremendously over the next 5 to 10 years. And it was pretty interesting. It's so funny. Once you get into the industry pretty well, you can pretty much work out the numbers and back engineer. You don't need a few bits of key information.
Yep.
And like you need to know how many staff they have and how big their premises are and what sort of, you know, download stuff they're doing. You can pretty much work it out. And so I was doing that. It was kind of fun to do. But I must admit, I spoke to Dave, John, about this as well. And he had almost exactly the same numbers. So I felt fairly vindicated. But we were both like, you know what? At the end of the day, we really like the FX Guide, FX PhD business model, the business model where we are stable, secure, and not going away because we actually make money as opposed to being a, you know, charity.
Yes.
A Google wanna buy us proposition.
Yeah. Well, and again, the business model is different from this idea of, you know, it's just a different approach in the way that we're doing things, you know.
Having been in a number of startups, though, I got to say, you guys wouldn't know, obviously, but behind the scenes, like, PhD is a very stable financial company. It's like it's not like a wing and a prayer and month to month, hand to mouth. I must admit, they're very proud of the fact that we are so stable. And I say that partly because, you know, I would hate to be otherwise, because I think it would be both demoralizing for us, and also I'd hate to be in a position where we were doing stuff with people and there was some risk of us not being able to deliver. But that's absolutely not the case. We are, in every respect, really hitting our targets, aren't we? In fact, this is our most successful term.
Yeah, I mean, the point is that we're sustaining what we're doing, you know, and that we're going to be here. Our goal is to do what we do and to serve the members of society, provide great training, and you know, provide great support, provide really compelling content for our members, and to be here for a while and keep it going. You know, I mean, we're not in this to do it and be gone. You know, that's not our goal. And you can see that maybe on one hand, we're fairly cautious about the way we approach things and roll things out. But our plan is to be stable and maintain control on our end.
No VC funding. And I think it's kind of important because I read the article and I was worried that maybe somebody in PhD would think, I wonder how these guys are going. Like, Mike's writing this article, maybe, you know. And, well, no, actually, we aren't. I didn't write about us pretty much in that story. But, our experiences are really healthy, I think. Yeah. And it's not like we're trying to say that we're, you know, wallowing in cash or anything.
Yeah, bathing in dollar bills or anything like that. But the idea is that we're making a sustainable thing that we can carry on in the future and not be a flash in the pants or a, you know, a comet that's bright and then gone the next term. Our goal is to be solid. What's that?
I was going to say, you know, that thing we always discuss is that somebody will come along and say, we're going to make a exact copy of FX Guide or FX PhD. And your first reaction is kind of like, whoa, you know, that's... And then you think, you know what? Talk to me again in like 2 years. Talk to me again in like 9 years when you're still doing it, 10 right. years. Because that's how long we've been doing FX Guide, and we've been doing PhD for a couple of years, right? And it's the, you know, turning up every day and actually delivering and actually meeting your deadlines and actually continuing to do it and not promising the world and under-delivering. That's what it's about.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really – I mean, I cannot thank individually enough the people that joined in term one.
Yes,
because at that point that was a leap of faith, and we will eternally thank those people.
No kidding. The fact that we could roll out a website at NAB and say, "This is what we're going to do. We're going over the next 12 weeks at that time, right? 14 weeks at that time, 12 weeks of classes. Trust us." Really? No, yep. We're not kidding. We're going to be having these classes come out and they're like, what? We don't get what this, you know, and it was a new concept. It's still kind of a new concept. We've done a better job of explaining it to people. But I got to say, even at that point, I don't think we did a great job of explaining what was going on. And to still have those people sign up and have the kind of faith in us is really incredible. And you're right. Definitely owe a good debt of gratitude to those people. And I mean, all members, but especially those people who took that leap of faith, having seen nothing from us at the time. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
the stability of effects guide, right? But... Not FX PhD.
But obviously the key, you know, aspect is that I guess that you just want to say is that A, we want to say thank you. B, we just want to give you a rain check that yes, everything is good in the house of FX, and that just because I'm writing stories about stuff, I'm always nervous about this. I'm always nervous that people are going to misinterpret
perception,
this stuff
yes.
off when it's off base. But as you said, I think we made a pretty good job in the opening paragraph of that story just explaining that. But a lot of the stuff going on around us, we were just curious to... some people had posted
using this forum as well. This podcast to talk about the story too, and just be really open. I mean, that's one thing. I think we've been incredibly transparent over every single term, to a fault, possibly at times. But I'd rather do that than have people kind of wondering where we're coming from on any of this stuff. I think it's important to be open and upfront with people.
Well, it really is a partnership between us and you guys, because you're committing to us, and we've got to commit back. You know what I mean? Like, you commit to us at the beginning of the term and pay money and hard-earned cash at that. So, and having said that, we are about, 10 days away from starting to get into serious discussions about next term?
Yes. I mean,
I just should tell you that we have an entire new whiteboard just about next term.
And it's not, and it's something that, Mike's means serious discussions. I mean, we've been discussing next term for last
since.
Term.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is when
the stuff we're doing in January 2009. But anyway.
But this is when we really start trying to lock people in and really hit the ground running and make sure we have a good new range of stuff that we'll roll out and hope people go, yeah, that's cool.
So what we do at this stage is in Sydney, in the tech penthouses, we actually have a whiteboard. We write up all the possible courses that we want to do and the streams that they're in, because of course we try and set up streams so that if you're interested in a particular aspect of what we do, that there's enough courses to keep you satisfied. And these are of course the new courses, because we've already had a lot of discussion about what we're going to repeat, and then we also in discussion with all the professors that are involved in all the various parts of the world that they're doing it, right? And then in addition to that, there's the discussion about getting them material to work on in those courses in all those different parts of the world. And so it's a big jigsaw puzzle right now. And you talk for a second, I'll count, but in terms of
the idea is that we do, and we start out from a broader range of the number of stuff that we want to do and have discussions about, and then figure out how it works in with the structure. Does it make more sense to wait another term and so we can do it right? Because that's a lot of discussion. We've actually done that in the past before. We've had something, we thought we could pull the plug, but you know what? We think it would be better if we waited to the next term to do it and do it right. And that's actually so far served us well. I mean, there's so many things that come up. And in addition, just to, work with the possible professors who are teaching the courses as well. It takes some time to work through them, make sure we're comfortable with them and they're comfortable with us, that they're going to deliver the stuff on time and be really into it and want to get in the forums and so forth. It's really a long and not difficult. It's kind of a difficult process,
it's
but
fun,
it's a hard process. But
oh, it's fun. It's great fun.
Sometimes,
I love it. I'm like, we could do this. This would be cool.
Yeah. Well, but sometimes it's not, actually. I mean, you said that before. I mean, it's also not at times. It's hard at times. It's really brutally hard. But I didn't mean to Mike's point, I didn't mean to make it seem like it's drudgery for us at all. It's a blast.
But I mean, for example, when we were talking about this term, right, I was like, I just would really like to just do some hardcore DOP stuff, some fundamentals of DOP-ness.
Yeah.
And we were like, who we should get? We should get somebody that really understands post and DOP, because that kind of narrowed it down a lot, right? Because I had a lot of friends that are DOPs, really good DOPs, right? But they would like be, kind of blank-faced on post. And then we're like, who we should totally get? We should get Ben Allen. That guy rocks, because he, writes software and he's a leading DOP. And he's done one of the things Ben did, for example, is they pulled him in on our version of ER to work out an entire new lighting plan for the whole show, right? To revamp it, after like seven seasons kind of thing, right? So he's just, they pull him in and he just gets carte blanche to go through and restructure the whole show lighting wise. And so we were like, well, can we get Ben? And then we had to coordinate with Ben's schedule and talk to Ben's people. And, and then we finally get Ben, all right? And then it's like, we were just like, ooh. And that's what I mean by it's fun, right? Because I just personally wanted to do that stuff. And for me personally, it's just like an indulgence to be able to have somebody of his caliber just going through and teaching us.
Yeah, 100%. I've got a couple, yeah, that I'm working on some stuff too that's kind of very much the same way. So,
and repeat that for like Gareth, for Victor, for like, you know, Martin, for Mark, for just so many of the guys in the courses, right? Like it's, you know what I mean? Like it's, there's just so many of these great people that we've managed to get into the, to doing stuff for us. That's just extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely wonderful. It's, it, it, but it, and it's also fun to work, to go through the process of getting them involved. It, for lack of a better term, it's about like almost dating someone and introducing them to PhD. Because, oh my God, once, I mean, the professors who've taken part in PhD are blown away by it. I mean, blown away by, not us, you know, but by our members. And just think it's the most amazing experience, amazed by the contacts that they make in the industry and so forth and so on. But so for someone who's not familiar with it, there's that little part where you introduce yourself, you know, start working with them or you know the person and show them the stuff and you hope they call you back.
This is getting weird.
But it is like that. You know, it is, though. It very much is. But it is fun. So anyway, but that's what, to the next point, that's what we're starting now.
In the forum, there's a suggestion box, which is our number one read thing. We have 9,350 reads of courses. Would you like to see? And still today, someone was posting in there, and I just want to repeat, I say this every month, I guess, we don't answer everything that you guys post in there. Like, you know, somebody will say, I think it'd be a really good idea to have a Silhouette Roto new course, right? And we don't respond, not because we don't read it, but because we can't respond to every single one of these suggestions. And also, sometimes we take those on board and then see what we can do about it and, you know, kind of think about it and mull it over and see what's a good idea. And, you know, and there'll be times that you guys have just beaten us up over like something like Cinema 4D, and we've caved and managed to find finally the right professor and move forward. But we do read every one of those posts.
We make notes
and,
on them for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily think it's a good idea that we immediately react to just one post. So we try and take it as a kind of barometer, that plus the surveys that you guys do each term. But definitely, if you're feeling like, God, next time if only they did this, then finally I would be happy, then that would be the place to post and do it in the next week.
Next day.
because I'm just counted, there are 23 potential courses on the board, which we're going to have to narrow down. And obviously you've got your own, I mean, I've got a whole bunch of yours on my board, right? So I'm like, I have 23 and you have another 23.
Yeah.
But we're not doing 23 new courses.
No, no. Yeah.
Nor could we if we want.
We can't. But. Yeah, we couldn't do it because, again, we want to have a limited number that we can watch and we learn and take care of and make sure that they're high quality. It's quality over quantity.
Well, plus we have to lock in all those props. Oh, and
geez. Yes. Yes.
Occasionally we lock in a prop and then they like just about now. Because now is about when they have to sort of start committing, right?
Yes.
About 6 weeks out. And they have to then make sure that works with their schedule and they've got films and they're trying to wait for the confirmation on and yada, yada. So, yeah. But anyway.
We have been known to lock them in, say, on March 31st as well.
Well, we work.
We don't work not to do that, but, you know.
But, yeah, touch and go. Hey, and if we pull it off, what we're hoping, we're going to have a major new thing that we've never seen before in the next term. But I'm not going to say any more on that score. But that's the end of the podcast. You listen to it. New things are afoot.
Every podcast.
Do I?
No. That we have at the end. We save something at the end.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. No. This one is a good one. This is a cracker.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to.
I'm going to have to go. I have some financial meet. Oh, she's gone, Debbie. I was supposed to talk to Debbie, and she just went away.
Oh, she'll be.
Okay, hopefully she'll be back. And I've got a flame to prep for install because I'm trying to get it up by tomorrow afternoon at this time so I can work on a couple scenes.
So Wednesday, which is probably today if you're in Sydney, tonight, the night of the 14th, is our red thing in Sydney, so email me. And then next, the 22nd, is and I guess I'm going to try calling you from New Zealand for next week's DOD,
cool.
Or we skip next week's DOD.
I think we should do it if you can. Call me. I'll work around your schedule because I know when you're traveling, it's sometimes harder to hit a certain time. But Let's make it happen.
Yeah. Okay. If for any reason that doesn't happen.
I've never spoken to anyone.
What do you mean?
In New Zealand, while they're in New Zealand.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I have. I've done articles. Never mind. Take that back.
Well, that was anticlimactic. Way to go from the big
I've
finish.
Never spoken with you. From.
I've never spoken with you. Yeah, well, that's really a thrill, isn't it? And anyway. I'd be stapling my eyelids open for not to miss that one.
Yes. All right, my friend, have a wonderful day. And
Just point out that this has been my FXPHDOG because I've had the dog and she's been very good. She's not been making any noise today.
I'm actually really interested to listen back to this and see how many of the sirens that we have. Actually, I've been looking on the web to see if there's anything on fire in Chicago and Major. But anyway.
John,
you know, I think
well,
it
Chicago.
Gives it a little bit of, you know, for this aspect, I don't, it gives it a little bit of life. That's my excuse.
I was really worried Skype was going to drop out midway through this. You were getting a bit Klingon-y there for a while, a bit Cylon-y, but it came back. I don't know how I sounded, but you've returned from Cylon.
Hey, wait, before you go, I was driving up, you know, I went down to Indiana with my parents today, and we're driving up listening to NPR, and of course, over the last couple days or a day ago, giant earthquake in China, just tragic.
Yeah, our thoughts and prayers are with both the people immediately affected in China, but of course also those the families of those. I understand from just the limited reports that I've got here is that the number is a shocking possible 10,000, and really can't express in words how sorry we are for those families.
Just hearing some of the reports and. So when the reporters or hosts of All Things Considered, which is a big NPR National Public Radio show here in the States, were actually in Shanghai recording stories or near there. And they were actually about 100 miles away from the epicenter of it and went and just told one of the reporters just went there and just she broke down on the air talking about the situation there, a school, the three-level middle school that just collapsed in one of the cities in the provinces nearby there. So really terrible. So yeah, hearts go out to prayers go out to everyone.
Yeah, most definitely. And
put things in perspective. I think and that followed by so closely with the cyclone in Myanmar.
Both of those are vast tragedies on such an inconceivably huge scale that it's, you really don't know what to do. And I guess if you do feel like you're something you can do, I'm sure that there are going to be, in the coming days and weeks, aid agencies setting up for donations. And certainly, we'd like to see anything that anyone can do to help because this really is a human tragedy beyond the scale that I can really comprehend.
No, I can't, so, either. It's just... anyway. Well, it's not... And end the podcast on a down note, but again, we just want to make sure we mention... I just want to mention that because it's definitely in our thoughts.
And to the rescue workers that are going to be going in to... Because if we learn anything from 9/11, it's that that doesn't just stop the tragedy with those that are directly affected, those that have to deal with the aftermath that can be incredibly devastating.
Yeah, exactly. And as we covered actually in PhD, those who cover such things as well. So, okay, well, that's it for this week. Again, thanks for taking the time to listen, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, see you, John.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.